Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is May 17th, 2021. The time is 2 o'clock. I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Carrie, and the LIO operator, Madison. Appreciate you being here to make this meeting available to the public. With me this afternoon is Senator L.B. Gray Jackson. Welcome and thank you for being here. And Senator Stevens, thank you for being here. I'd like to thank my committee aide, Melody Wilterdink, for her wonderful work. So today we have two items on the agenda. We have two House bills today. The first one is House Bill 125. This was introduced by Representative Nelson, and thank you for being here in person to share your bill with us. It's military and family employment preference. This is the first hearing in Labor and Commerce. We'll have an introduction, sectional analysis, invited testimony, and then we will open it for public testimony and close public testimony. After that, we have House Bill 36. This is a motor vehicle dealers bill introduced by Representative Matt Klayman. It's the second hearing in Labor and Commerce. We have one amendment, and then we have some individuals available for questions, and then the plan will be to move that bill out this afternoon. So with that, welcome. Representative Nelson, please feel free to introduce yourself and your district and your legislation.
Thank you, Chair Costello and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Thank you for hearing House Bill 125. And for the record, David Nelson, representative for House District 15 in Anchorage. House Bill 125 seeks to extend the current private sector and state employment hiring preferences to military spouses and their dependent children. Military spouses are among the highest unemployed and underemployed groups. They are highly educated and qualify for a range of careers, but due to frequent moves, the unemployment rate among military spouses is 24%, and there is a 26% wage gap compared to their civilian counterparts. In 2019, the Blue Star Families Military Family Lifestyle Survey found that 49% of military spouses indicated that financial issues were their top stressor for military families, and 48% were concerned about employment. Of employed military spouses, 75% were considered underemployed. So House Bill 125 can provide some help to reduce these concerns for military families by providing a hiring preference. A COVID-19 military support initiative created by the Blue Star Families and the Associate of Defense Communities found that an additional 17% of military spouses lost their jobs during the pandemic, on top of the 24% unemployed before the pandemic. Currently, 35 states and the District of Columbia provide hiring preferences to active duty spouses or their surviving spouses. House Bill 125 will add Alaska to this list that support our military community and honor the sacrifices that these families make in service to our country. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 125 to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and I will answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. I'd like to also mention that Senator Rivak has joined us. Thank you for being here this afternoon. Questions from committee members. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as a former military person, I congratulate you on this. I think it makes an enormous amount of sense. But actually, I thought some of it was already in place. But can you explain that? What is in place now for giving an advantage to military spouses? Do we have anything in place right now, or is this the first time this has come up?
Through the chair to Senator Stevens, there is already, and I will ask Verdi Bowens, if he's on the phone, to answer or to expound a little bit more, but there is already a hiring preference for military personnel, but this would extend it out, that already set in statute preference to their spouses and dependents.
I see. Well, that's great to hear. I know there are other avenues of trying to solve this problem. I've been working on a bill for teachers to give them certification, faster certification, not the long delays, and I know there's something out there for for other things, but maybe other occupations. So all good ways to try to solve this problem. So I would appreciate hearing from the experts as well on this.
Any further questions for the bill sponsor? Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Nelson. I am going to go to Verdi Bowen. Verdi, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record and answer the question that Senator Stevens had about the how this bill it deviates from the current statute.
Yes, ma'am. This is Verdi Bowen. I'm the Director of Veterans Affairs for the state of Alaska. And through the chair to Senator Stevens, currently now we provide point preferences for veterans that are in the state, but we do not provide any preference for spouses or children of spouses. And this bill would go a long way to fix that gap that we have and would allow those spouses to be able to find more readily available gainful employment. And it's just a great gesture to join the other 35 states, too, as well.
Thank you, Verdi. Senator Stevens?
Yeah, thank you, Verdi. I appreciate that. And thank you, Madam Chair. You said that much better than I did, asking the question. But so, Verdi, how about the issue of could you explain what you mean by point preference? What is that exactly?
Well, through the chair to Senator Stevens, there's a point preference. What we have in the state is that depending on the rate of your disability, if you have a fairly high disability, then you'll receive a 10-point preference. And the best way to explain that is that if you're applying for a job as a trooper or a corrections officer where they use a point system, they'll add those points on there to provide you more or less a hand up as you're applying for those positions. The rest of the state has what they have done where they don't provide points is that those individuals that are disabled or have disabilities, they will automatically receive a interview.
And thank you, Verdi. So is that just for a disability? Is there any, how does the preference work like for a spouse?
Well, the spouse would be, through the chair to Senator Stevens, how that would work for the spouse is the spouse would give them a preferential treatment for hiring. For instance, we can use, and I like using Jiffy Lube because I just used them last week, but if your spouse was changing oil at Jiffy Lube, Jiffy Lube can provide a spouse preference and, you know, because they're not state, a spouse preference would be allowed so that if a spouse comes in, they would be selected first before anyone else for that position.
Well, thank you. That's very interesting. So, and then I assume it applies to both male and female spouses. Is there a system of reporting that where you felt you were not given a fair advantage, or how do you follow through on setting up these standards?
Through the chair to Senator Stevens, the way the standards would be set up would be for each company that voluntarily provides the preference. For example, if you were working at Walmart or Fred Meyer, they would probably have standards that go through their HR department back to their regional offices so that they would have to provide evidence of how many people they hired that were military spouses or veterans. That today they report veteran status up through the organizations, because I know that Home Depot does and so does Lowe's for a veteran status. They would probably most likely do exactly the same for spouses.
I see, pretty well. Thank you very much.
So we're going to take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I've asked Kim Skipper, who's the staff to Representative Nelson, to walk the committee through a sectional so that we can further understand, especially Section 2 and 3, and walk us through the bill. So thank you, Kim. And if you could state your name for the record, as usual.
Madam Chair, my name is Kim Skipper, Chief of Staff to Representative David Nelson. The sectional analysis for House Bill 125, Section 1, AS 1880-200C, this section does not prohibit a private employer from having a hiring preferences for persons described in Section 2 of this bill. And in Section 2, AS 23.88010, This section repeals and reenacts the current statute by adding definitions removed from Section 1 for clarity, and it also does not prohibit a private employer from hiring preferences to active military, veterans, and families. This section adds language to include spouses and dependent children of deceased service members to the list. Section 3, AS 39.
Kim, do you mind actually reading the statute, because you glossed over the actual people who are eligible? And the way I read it, it's that it's the spouse or dependent child in addition to a surviving spouse or dependent child. So it's in both, if I'm correct in reading this, it's both the spouse and dependent child of a living service member. And if you could go through that list on page or line 17 through 22.
What page are we on?
Page 2, lines, section 2, which is basically line 11.
Sure, and I don't know if we have Dan Wayne online, because he can also help clarify. My understanding, just before I read the section, is the bill was amended in Labor and Commerce to change it to a dependent child of a Gold Star member. So if a Gold Star family, a member was killed in active duty, then the dependent child would receive the benefit. The spouse of an active duty or deceased member would get the preference either way. The dependent child, at my understanding, from talking to legal during House Labor and Commerce, was that the dependent child was amended to just say Gold Star family members.
So on page 2, line 23, it does read the spouse or dependent child of a person described in 1 of this subsection, and 1 is the list.
This is the wrong version of the bill. Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Do you want to take a brief at ease? We can
brief
do that.
Ease.
Okay, brief at ease, please. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will go back on record so that the public can hear our discussion. Kim, and if you could state your name for the record.
Again, my name is Kim Skipper, staff to Representative David Nelson. On page 6 of the bill is where the changes were made to all the underlined sections of the bill. They removed, on line 27, they removed the dependent child from line 27, but they kept the dependent child under line 29. And then by doing that, it removed the dependent child from just a regular active duty member from getting the preference, but it allows the preference for a Gold Star, a person that was killed in the line of duty.
So, Kim, thank you for that. However, on page 2, I'm reading on line 23 and 24, it actually says, or dependent child. Do we have the drafter online? You want to call the perhaps you could continue going through the sectional, and then I'll go to the invited testimony and Senator Stevens.
And Kim, could you explain that again? You said it removed dependent child. Tell me what happened there.
So I can actually speak on that, and through the chair to Senator Stevens. During
state your name for the record.
Representative David Nelson. Talking to Labor and Commerce on the House side, there was a bit of back and forth on extending the benefits to dependents as well. And the amendment that was put forward kind of narrowed the focus on dependents to just individuals who are a part of Gold Star families.
So a dependent child not from Gold Star family was removed from being considered.
Correct.
Is that a good idea?
Correct. Well, so I would rather see this bill pass, and if that's what it was taking to have this bill pass, and in speaking to that amendment author, I spoke on the difficulty it is for dependent children to acclimate to their new environment. But keeping in that Gold Star family section was still very meaningful.
I understand.
Representative Nelson, so on page six, it removed it from state employment, but on page two, it kept the dependent child with the hiring preference for a private employer. So I'm not sure if that was the intention of the other body, was to remove it for state employment but keep it for private employment. Because I'm reading the bill right here. But anyway, we can maybe get...
Kim Skipper, staff to Representative Nelson. One of the difference between the state employment versus the private sector employment, the private sector employment is a may, not a shall. So I think they may have just kept it for that. But for state employment, I think they wanted to limit it. To just a dependent of Gold Star families.
Okay, thank you. I think you're right. That explains that difference. So the private employer may grant a preference, and they may grant it to all of the list on page 2, lines 17 through F, including the spouse or dependent child of any of those individuals.
Correct.
So, thank you. Senator Rivak?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just noticed that there's somewhat of a narrow definition of dependent child on page 2, line 28, and it goes on to read, one who is permanently disabled or under the age of 19 or 23 years of age and registered at and attending a full-time accredited educational or technical institution. So it kind of... So it keeps them, it's pretty young to me. It seems like a pretty narrow definition that makes me a little more comfortable.
So, Senator Rivak, it says under 19 years of age, and so it excludes 19 to 20, up to 23. So that looks like that group is not considered dependent, I guess, because of their age. So I'd like to now invite Kate Sheehan to state your name for the record, and if you have any answers to some of the discussion that we've been having. Kate?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Kate Sheehan. I'm Director of the Division of Personnel Labor Relations. I'm available for any questions. Yes, under the state with the shall. So right now we do have a policy of interviewing every 5-point or 10-point veteran. And so what we would do is we would give the same consideration to a qualifying dependent or spouse.
So, Kate, if you look, this is Senator Costello, on page 6, it says that points equal to 5% shall be added to the list. So you're saying that it's just an interview for the spouse?
Yes, Madam Chair. So we used to have a rating system that we do not use anymore. There are some positions that may still have a rating system. So our policy is every 10-point veteran is required to have an interview should they meet the minimum qualifications. But we currently allow, if you are a 5 or 10-point veteran, you receive an interview. So when we look at consideration of a dependent or a spouse, we do a more in-depth review of the application. But our current policy is to actually allow the interview as long as they do meet the minimum qualifications.
So, Kate, is that in regulation then? Because I'm not seeing it here in the statute.
No, Madam Chair, 10-point, yes, we do need to interview if they meet the minimum qualifications. Our policy is to give it to the 5-point veterans, but that is currently a policy decision.
So thank you, and so that's in regulation?
Madam Chair, yes, correct.
Okay. Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you. So maybe you can help us understand, Ms. Sheehan, the 5 and 10 points, so some get 5 points, some gets 10 points, get 10 points. And I don't understand how that fits into the whole thing. Is that much of an advantage? Is this a bare advantage or a lot of advantage? 10 points, out of how many potential points. Can you help me out there?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Stevens. It's a little bit more confusing now because we don't have a rating system like we used to use. So really how it would work now is if you're a 10-point veteran, if you meet the minimum qualifications, you will get an interview. And so it gets you into the door. It used to add on additional points when we had the rating system, but we went away from that years ago. And so we haven't necessarily changed what we call a 5- and 10-point veteran. So the 5-point veteran, again, for those who might still use a rating, and I don't know off the top of my head if anyone does, I heard Bertie talking about maybe troopers, it's a little bit easier. So the way we actually manage it is a 10-point vet, you absolutely get the interview. My policy, since I've been director, has been if you're a 5-point vet, you get an interview as long as you meet the minimum qualifications. So we would extend that under this bill to the dependents and the spouses.
So, Kate, thank you for that. So is there an issue then of having the statute refer to point system that we don't actually use?
Madam Chair, that's a great question. It's not just in the statute. It's kind of all over. I think in a perfect world, we would try to clean it all up. But no, I don't think there's an issue right now with how this is worded.
Thank you very much. Next, Tammy Perot, who's the regional liaison with the Department of Defense at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. Tammy, if you could provide your name and affiliation for the record, and then provide any comments, please.
Senator Costello and members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Tammy Perot, and I'm with the Department of Defense. I'm here to express support for House Bill 125, expanding protection of private sector employment preferences and establishing state employment preferences to spouses, dependents, and surviving spouses. I serve as the Northwest Regional Liaison for the Defense State Liaison Office, and we operate under the direction of the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. Our mission is to be a resource for state policymakers. In a February 2020 letter to Governor Dunleavy, the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness highlighted the need to support military spouses. The letter stated that, quote, military spouse employment and the associated financial and personal well-being is an important component of the retention of service members. More than half of all active duty military personnel are married, and 88% of employed military spouses indicate that they wanted or needed to work. Not only are military spouses highly influential in general regarding their service members' decision to remain in the service, but over 28% of our service members reported that their decision to leave the military would largely or moderately be affected by their spouse's career prospects, end quote. As you may already know, Alaska is home to approximately 8,000 active duty military spouses and 3,250 National Guard and Reserve spouses, making them an important part of the workforce. And as you've heard from the sponsors, military spouses are among the highest unemployed and underemployed group in the nation. Additionally, spouses report significant challenges obtaining employment due to frequent moves, creating additional stress on their family finances. As such, the Department of Defense supports the policy within HB 125 and asks that this committee move this legislation forward. We are especially appreciative of Representative Nelson for the introduction of this bill and to those who have joined him as additional sponsors. Madam Chair, I stand for your questions.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Crow. I couldn't agree with you more in what you're attempting to do. And supporting military spouses. I guess the only question I have is, as the chair one said, we're referring in this bill to a point system which we don't really use. Is that a common in other states to use a point system? Can you tell me how other states approach this?
Through the chair to Senator Stevens, thank you very much for that question. Many states do have a point system which is used. However, there is significant variability among the 35 states who have some type of legislation like this in practice. And unfortunately, I can't give a clear picture of all of those, of the process that all of those states use at this time. However, point systems do seem to be fairly prevalent across the nation.
Great. Thank you.
I'll call on you when, thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Dan Wayne with the Legislative Legal Services. Dan, thank you so much for chiming into the committee. We had an earlier conversation where we're looking at page 2, where we're talking about the private employer may grant an employment preference, and we've added the dependent child of a person who meets those qualifications on line 17 through 23. And then when you move to page 6, we're looking at that, and it sounds like dependent child is not included unless it's a dependent child of a Gold Star family, and this is they shall be allowed some point benefits. Can you explain to the committee the difference between these two, and also how it deviates from the current statute?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've summed it up pretty well. The may and shall is an important factor, I think. The bill was amended. The language in the second part of the bill was a lot more similar to the language in the first part of the bill with regard to dependents, until it was amended. And I think there were policy reasons why folks in another committee felt like narrowing the scope of the benefit a little bit so that it was just the dependent children of Gold Star members. So there is a difference. You've identified it. You're not imagining it. And because in the earlier part of the bill it's discretionary, the employer doesn't have to grant the preference. It just says that they may. I think it was felt that it was that there wasn't a need to narrow the scope of the benefit for dependent children. And when you say shall and require the state to grant this preference, you were requiring that one person basically gets to get in line of other people, in front of other people in line, because they're a dependent child of somebody who's in the military, on furlough from active service, discharged from honorable conditions, really with no time limits. So that's a pretty broad, has a pretty broad reach, and it's, that's all I can really say about it. As far as the last part of your question, I think, had to do with the difference. I don't know. Maybe I didn't understand it.
Okay, thank you. I think you answered my question. My other question has to do with the age. So when they discuss dependent child, it's under 19. I assume that's the definition of dependent child. And then they also include that if the child is 23 years of age and registered at and attending a full-time accredited educational institution, then they are also eligible for the benefit if for a state position, and actually for the employment, which is a may.
Right. So I think both definitions of dependent child have that those two ages in it, and it's pretty common in other statutes that have to do with the administration of some kind of a benefit to extend the benefit to dependents who are attending college full time. But I don't know. It's what the bill says, and it was the. There's policy reasons behind it, and I can't really comment on that.
Okay, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. I assume that it's and I'll let the sponsor comment in a moment. I assume it's because you don't want to prevent someone from going to college just so that they can get the preference, and so you're allowing for those who've chosen to go to college to still receive the preference, I assume is the rationale behind it.
Perhaps it's assuming that in many cases that parents, including a person who's in the military, will be supporting their child through college years while they, you know, have a limited ability to earn money through employment. In other words, they're still dependents on their parents, not because they don't want to work, but because they're in college. And it's in an accredited educational or technical institution.
Well, thank you once again, Dan, for making yourself available as the drafter of the bill. Really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Next, I'm going to open public testimony on House Bill 123. Is there anyone online who wishes to provide public testimony? Okay, seeing none, I will close public testimony on House Bill 125, Military and Family Employment Preference. And Representative Nelson, would you like to provide any comments to the committee related to the discussion that we had? I mean, that would be really helpful. Thank you.
Yes, and for the record, Representative David Nelson from Anchorage. And through the chair, I appreciate the comments during this committee. A few things I do want to touch on. We do have something from NCSL that explains the rest of the 35 states, well, all 50 states, and what benefit they extend already to military individuals, their spouses, and dependents. And it's on a point-based system, so it was in the packet. So it's the point system that's already for a state statute exists in other states as well. And I do want to reiterate this out, as I did on the floor, in the House, that this is a may, not a shall. You know, no one is forcing private enterprises to do this. It is just a courtesy, just as anyone would extend that courtesy out to, actively serving individuals or retirees.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Representative Nelson, and your aide, for Chief of Staff, for being here in person for the committee. We will go ahead and hold this bill for further consideration, and again, appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
We'll take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next on our agenda is House Bill 36. This is the second hearing for the bill. We have opened and closed public testimony on it. Today we have an amendment to the bill, and my aide, Melody Wilterdink, is here to explain it. And I've asked her prior to explaining the amendment that she just briefly summarizes what the bill does. And we have the staff to the sponsors here also, so they can comment on whether they, like that amendment. So with that, Melody.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, this is Melody Wilterdink, staff to Senator Costello. So first, House Bill 36, as it stands right now, creates stricter insurance requirements for licensed motor vehicle dealers, and also a higher bonding requirement for them My understanding from the sponsor is that this brings us closer in line to the requirements for other states. These kinds of insurance requirements will cover people when they're, say, test driving a car. The bonding requirements will give people recourse when they've been sold a car that does not meet basic driving necessities to be on the road. They can actually go back to the state and say this was fraudulently sold and have some recourse for the money that they spent on that. And so I am going to go through Amendment B2, Bravo 2.
If I can move the amendment first, I move Amendment Bravo.2.
Object for persons for discussion.
There's been an objection for the purpose of explanation and discussion. So with that, Melody.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, this is Melody Walterdink. So talking to stakeholders, we realized that part of what House Bill 36 is trying to resolve is that some registered motor vehicle dealers will go to closed auctions, which are only open to registered dealers, and they'll buy cars that are actually being sold for parts. They're not meant to be driven on the road. And then they'll turn around and they'll sell these vehicles on places like Craigslist, posing as individuals, not motor vehicle dealers, and selling them to unsuspecting buyers who then take them on the road, and they can be quite dangerous. And so what HB 36 does right now with the increased insurance requirements and the bonding requirements, it gives these buyers some recourse when they are sold cars fraudulently. But what Amendment Bravo.2 would do would mean that when car buyers are going to any sort of motor vehicle dealer, anybody who's a registered dealer, that dealer has to identify themselves as such to anyone who is buying a car from them. And so they would know then that they're not buying from an individual, they're buying from a dealer, and then that they have these avenues of recourse that are already in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the objection maintained to the amendment?
Yes, just for a question, Madam Chair. Could you talk to us about the stakeholders that you spoke to? Who have you been talking to that helped you figure this out?
Thank you, Senator Stevens, through the chair. Again, this is Melody Walterdink for the record. So I spoke to motor vehicle dealers, large and small, and some victims, people whose kids had bought cars. You know, these are usually young folks who are probably making the largest purchase that they have ever made in their lives, but they still don't have a big budget. And so they're looking for something that's inexpensive for themselves. And these are the people who are really the victims here of these fraudulent car salesmen.
Thank you. Well, then I will remove my objection.
Is there any further objection to Amendment Bravo.2? Okay, seeing none, the amendment does pass. And I do want to mention that we've been joined by the Senate President, Senator Machicki. Welcome, and thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Melody. I'd like to now invite the bill sponsor staff to let us know what the sponsor position is on the amendment. Welcome, Sophie, if you could state your name for the record and who you're with and what Representative Klayman's position is on this amendment.
Sure. For the record, my name is Sophie Jonas, and I am staff to Representative Klayman. And Representative Klayman is supportive of this amendment and thinks it's a good idea. So,
thank you. And I appreciate the work my staff did because I think it strengthens the intent of the legislation for the dealers to actually state to the consumer. I think it strengthens the consumer protection portion that that the sponsor was also trying to do through the original legislation. So with that, Senator Stevens.
Just curious on a little bit further. So right now, a dealer can buy a car and sell it and not tell anybody that they are a dealer and then get out of any responsibility. If I think I understand it right, this would change it so that the dealer has to inform the purchaser, and then he or she would have to be required to do what they're supposed to be doing anyway, which is guaranteeing the vehicle. Is that sort of it?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, yes, that's correct. We also have a dealer online. Perhaps he could speak to that. Marcus, perhaps?
Senator Machicki, did you also have a question? Okay, go. Why don't you ask your question, and then we'll see who we need to be calling on.
So this, and I wanted it on record that I was here for the amendment. I assume that that is the case, and I support the amendment. I guess my question is this: how does this bill deal with an individual that I have a friend that, like some people I know, buy a lot of shoes. He really likes vehicles, but he only has room to store so many vehicles, so he actually ends up selling them rather frequently. Like once every couple of years, he buys a new vehicle, loses an enormous amount of money, but that's his business, and then sells relatively new vehicles independently. That doesn't affect that individual. We're talking about, so how do you determine the difference between a person that sells a car frequently versus someone who's actually in the business as a dealer?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, in statute currently, there's a threshold above which you're required to obtain a motor vehicle dealer license, and that threshold is 5 cars, although it's also my understanding that that's not enforced. But you do have to sell over 5 cars to obtain a motor vehicle dealer's license.
Madam
Senator Chair. Machicki.
Is that 5 cars annually?
Annually, correct.
Ah, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions? Okay. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to hear from dealer if we can.
So we have online Martin Martinson with the Alaska Auto Dealers Association. Martin, thank you for joining us for questions today. If you could state your name for the record and provide your response to Senator Stevens and any other comments you might have.
For the record, my name is Martin Martinson. I'm the owner of Continental Auto Group in Anchorage, Alaska, and a board member of the Alaska Auto Dealers. Madam Chair, thanks for hearing our bill. And through the chair, Senator Stevens, to answer your question, so the amendment, in our opinion, we like it. I think it strengthens it. It requires, again, the dealers to disclose that they are a dealer and that there is recourse. We also required in the bill that you have to at least have a phone number because that wasn't a requirement, so that for the consumer that they have some recourse if they've been sold a bill of goods that isn't what was promised. Does that answer your question?
Well, thank you. Actually, you said it better than I did, Martin. But so as a dealer, is this a big issue? I mean, are there... Is this happening often? Is this something you are concerned about?
It absolutely. It's become a very big issue in Anchorage and in South Central, actually. And before Ed Sniffen was the acting attorney general, he was the attorney general for consumer protection. And this was one of the biggest complaints that they had in Anchorage was more or less dealer fraud on vehicles. So it is a big problem.
Okay, thank you, Martin.
Martin, thank you so much for sharing that and shedding some light on the nature of the problem. Are there any further questions? You. Senator Reback?
I think I have a motion. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 36, version Bravo, also referred to as 32-LS0271/Bravo, be advanced from the committee as amended with individual recommendations in the attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, the bill moves. I also want to thank Marcus Whaler, who's a board member of the Alaska Automotive Dealers Association, Steve Allwine, who's the Alaska Auto Dealers Association member, and also Jeffrey Schmitz, the DMV director, for being online for questions. I appreciate you your attention to the legislation. That ends our meeting for this afternoon. Our next committee meeting is Wednesday, May 19th at 1:30. We will be considering bills previously heard or scheduled. So with that, we are adjourned.